Ever get that feeling, you come across a case and it just makes you think, like really think, about whether our justice system is actually fair?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like those cases that stick with you.
Exactly. We're going to take a deep dive into one of those today. It's Dickens v. the State, a Georgia Supreme Court case.
Okay. I'm intrigued. Lay it on me.
So, on the surface, it's about this woman, Latoya Dickens. She was convicted of felony murder, stabbed her husband. But the thing that really makes you stop and think is, did she really get a fair shot? Did her lawyer really represent her well enough to ensure justice was served?
Ah, so it's not just about the crime itself, but the whole process, the legal representation. Makes sense.
Right. And this case is a perfect example of how that plays out in real life.
Gotcha. So less about the verdict, more about the journey, the legal fight.
Precisely. So, just to give everyone some background, Latoya Dickens was convicted of felony murder. But there's a lot more to this story. We're talking years of abuse. It all started when she was 13 years old, and the victim got her pregnant.
Whoa. That's heavy. Okay, so we're already talking about a really complex situation.
Right. And the abuse, it just kept going for years. During the trial, her lawyer even brought in an expert to talk about battered person syndrome,
Yeah.
to try and help the jury understand what she was going through.
Makes sense trying to provide context. I mean, abuse like that, it changes you. It changes how you react to things.
Absolutely. But here's the real kicker. There was this woman, Leslie Pines. Seems like she could have been a crucial witness, someone who could back up all these stories of abuse, not just Dickens' experience, but others too. But Pines, she wasn't there at the trial.
Missing witness. Yeah, I see where this is going. That's a huge hole in the defense. If she
Yeah.
could corroborate the abuse, that's a game changer.
Right. And that's exactly what Dickens argued when she appealed. She said her lawyer didn't do enough to get Pines to testify, and that because of that, she didn't get effective assistance of counsel.
The classic ineffective assistance of counsel argument. It all boils down to whether her lawyer's actions or inactions actually affected the outcome of the trial.
And that's what we're here to figure out. Did the trial court get it right when they denied Dickens a new trial? Her argument rested on two main points. One, that her lawyer failing to get Pines on the stand was ineffective assistance, and two, that the judge said some things during the trial that maybe shouldn't have been said.
Interesting. So, did the legal process work the way it should have? Was it actually fair? Lots to unpack there.
Totally. And to get to the bottom of all this, we have to look at this thing called the Strickland test. It's the framework courts use to figure out if a defendant's lawyer dropped the ball, so to speak.
Yeah, Strickland, the gold standard for ineffective assistance claims. Super important for anyone in law school.
Right. So anyone listening who's studying law, pay attention. This is like Constitutional Law 101. Basically, what does someone like Dickens have to prove to convince a court to give her a do-over?
So remember Strickland v. Washington, the Supreme Court laid out this two-part test.
Two parts. Okay, break it down for us.
First, they have to show that their lawyer's performance was deficient, meaning they got to prove the lawyer messed up, acted in a way that a competent attorney wouldn't have under similar circumstances.
So first, prove the lawyer screwed up. Got it. What's the second part?
Second part is prejudice. Even if they can show the lawyer made mistakes, they also have to prove those mistakes actually hurt their case. Like, not just maybe hurt, but that there's a real reasonable chance the outcome of the trial would have been different if the lawyer had done their job right.
Ah, so it's not enough to just point fingers. You got to show those mistakes actually tip the scales. Makes sense.
Exactly. Now, in Dickens's case, her argument was all about her lawyer not making sure Leslie Pines testified. So, how did the Georgia Supreme Court apply Strickland to that?
Right, that's the million-dollar question. How did they analyze that under Strickland?
Okay, so Justice Hunstein wrote the majority opinion, and they basically said Dickens didn't meet either part of the Strickland test. They didn't actually say the trial lawyer wasn't deficient when it came to Pines, but they went straight to the second part, prejudice.
So they focused on whether that missing testimony actually made a difference. Interesting. What was their thinking on that?
Here's the thing. The majority really hammered on the fact that Dickens didn't bring Pines herself to testify at the hearing for the motion for a new trial.
Ah, so no pines in the flesh, so to speak. Okay.
Right, and they didn't have any legally acceptable alternative for her live testimony either, like a sworn affidavit saying what Pines would have said under oath. All they had was the lawyer saying what he thought Pines would have said.
Just the lawyer's word. I'm guessing the court wasn't buying that.
You guessed it. Big takeaway here. The court made it crystal clear hearsay cannot establish what Pines' testimony would have been. So the lawyer's version, what he thought Pines might say, that's hearsay, not admissible.
So it's like he he said, she said kind of thing. Not solid enough.
Yeah, exactly. It couldn't legally prove Pines' testimony would have helped Dickens, and more importantly, that it would have likely changed the verdict. They needed to hear it from Pines herself, or have a formal legal document outlining her testimony to decide if it was strong enough to swing things the other way.
Logically, it makes sense. Mm-hmm. Without the real deal or a rock-solid substitute, it's all just guesswork. Now, there was also that concurring opinion from Justice Benham, right? Didn't he have a slightly different take?
Yeah, Justice Benham agreed to deny the new trial, but his reasoning was a little different. He actually thought the trial lawyer's offer of what Pines would say, what's called a proffer, was enough.
Really? So he disagreed with the majority on the first part of Strickland, the deficient performance.
Yep. He thought the lawyer not getting Pines to testify could be considered below the standard of reasonable professional assistance.
Wow. Okay. So Justice Benham saying the lawyer might have messed up, but he still didn't think a new trial was necessary. Why?
Because ultimately he agreed with the majority that Dickens didn't prove the second part of Strickland, prejudice.
Ah, so even if the lawyer did mess up, it didn't change the game. Gotcha.
Right. He pointed out that even without Pines' direct testimony, the defense had already presented a bunch of evidence about the abuse. We're talking that expert testimony on battered person syndrome and then other witnesses who talked about the abusive relationship.
So Justice Benham felt like, sure, Pines' testimony might have helped, but it wouldn't have added anything truly new. It was basically repeating what the jury already knew.
Exactly. He figured since the jury already heard all that, there wasn't a good chance that Pines' testimony would have changed their minds. The story of abuse was already part of the case.
Makes you realize how hard it is to argue ineffective assistance of counsel. It's not just about a witness not showing up. Wow. You have to convince the court that the lack of that specific testimony was the thing that tipped the scales.
100%. This case is a textbook example of how tough that is, and a huge lesson for law students. If you're going to say a missing witness screwed things up, you better have that witness at the hearing, or at least a legit affidavit spelling out what they would said and why it matters.
Practical advice right there. If you're claiming a missing witness caused real damage, you better have the receipts, either the witness themselves or a solid affidavit.
No doubt. This case highlights just how strict the rules of evidence are for these kinds of claims. It's not about what the lawyer says the witness would said. It's about hard evidence, stuff the court can actually consider. And it also shows how much leeway courts give to the decisions made by trial lawyers, unless those decisions are just way off base.
Okay, so we've covered the missing witness. What about that second part of Dickens's appeal? The one about the judge making those questionable comments? What did the Georgia Supreme Court say about that?
Both the majority and the concurring opinion shot that argument down. They looked at all the times the judge questioned witnesses and decided it was all within the bounds of what Georgia law allows, specifically OCGA sections 17 and 857. That law says judges can ask questions to clear things up as long as they don't give their own opinion on the evidence or say whether they think the defendant is guilty.
So the court's basically saying the judge was just trying to make sure everyone understood what was going on, not trying to sway the jury or say Dickens was guilty.
Exactly. They decided the judge was just trying to get all the facts out in the open to make sure both sides got a fair trial.
So to recap, Dickens's appeal didn't work. The main reason was she couldn't prove the missing witness, Leslie Pines, really hurt her case, even with all the evidence of abuse and the expert testimony. The court needed more than just her lawyer's word to say Pines' testimony would have made a difference. And the whole thing about the judge's comments, that got thrown out too.
Right.
Big takeaway here. Proving ineffective assistance of counsel is tough. You need rock-solid evidence, and appellate courts tend to trust the trial court's judgment unless there's a glaring mistake.
It's a wild case. Really makes you think about how hard it is to guarantee a fair trial. So here's something to ponder, especially for those of you deep in the legal world. Knowing how hard it is to prove prejudice and with all those rules of evidence, what other legal strategies could Dickens' defense have used to make a stronger case about her lawyer not getting Pines to testify? Just something to think about, you know? How do we ensure a truly fair trial when the stakes are so high?
Yeah, lots to chew on there. Fascinating case.
Totally. Until next time.
Yeah.